Rebecca's introduction, I'm going to look at Anna. Anna spoke briefly when she was here previously, and she told me a little bit about her life, and I found it very interesting. And if I might say, I found it particularly interesting because here living in Australia, we live in a very peaceful, settled, comfortable, wealthy place, and in the monasteries, simple by Australian standards. By standards of many people in the world, is very difficult, it's very luxurious. So I wanted to, I was very interested to hear Anna's story, because I know that Venerable Lawana, like many Buddhist monks and nuns across the world, whether in Burma or in Vietnam or in Cambodia or in Laos or in Tibet or in China, in so many places have faced so much hardship and difficulty. And I think it's very useful for us and very inspiring to hear some of those difficulties that, and the story of your life and how is it that you've come to be here. So I'd like to invite you to share with us your story. And please.
Before she came here, she had to struggle so many years to come here. Before she came here, she went for the Engu Meditation Center. There she meditated for 9 days. And after that, she divorced her husband and left one child. And then she came, she fled away to Thailand with three sons. And then she had to struggle about nearly 4 years at the camp, refugee camp. From there, she had to come here, and then she's very eager and enthusiastic to become a nun. So she came here, and she wants to become a nun, and then she has so many Burmese women, some want to make nun for the when they have time to
ordain. When it comes to the right time, they want to ordain. Venerable mentioned that to me last time, that many of the Burmese women feel like that as well.
That's it.
Please.
No Burmese man cannot be chained nun, and I want to become nun very much, and one of the nun come from Sakai, Uttama, Chao, I said, Uttama,
one of the,
come here and make me nun, and she come and retreat here and go back. I have no teacher, I have no monastery, I have no independence. I only want it. I try by myself. I struggle by myself. I listening. I practice by myself.
Listening the CDs.
I go to Blue Mountain, Bahasi Yaitan, Kuinga Yaitan, and at the last time I come here.
When she came here and asked to so many monasteries, there are 3-4 monasteries here, Burmese, and they disagree and disapprove of being a nun. So when the monk from Sakai came, she requests her to become a nurse and a nun. So she became as a nun. But she wants to stay independently as a nun with her.
I know several years ago when I was speaking to some of the monks in Sydney, and I spoke to some of the Burmese monks, and I spoke to Venerable Jagarabi Wangsa. I'm not sure how do you say in Burmese. Pali Jagarabi Wangsa. In Burmese, how do you say Uzagara, I think. Now he's very old. At that time, and we were setting up the Sangha Association, and he asked, will the nuns be part of the Sangha Association? And I said, yes, definitely. And he said, for me, no problem. He said, maybe some people have a problem, but for me, it's no problem.
What did Sandor of Pranamati say?
About Panisami?
Yeah.
I didn't speak to him about the ASA, but I did speak to him about the bhikkhunis. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So, Venerable, tell us, you grew up in Myanmar,
yes.
Is that right? But you're from the Karen people, is that right?
Yeah, Karen Buddhist.
Karen
Buddhist. All my families are Karen. Christian, Catholic.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you tell us something about your upbringing? How was it? Where did you grow up? What was it like? Did you grow up in a village? What was it like growing up in the family? Why everyone was Christian?
Yeah.
But you became Buddhist. Why is that? Tell us your story. How did that happen?
The children doesn't agree to Padamatnan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they refuse to Padamatnan. But she's very eager to.
Sure. Yeah.
That's why.
Against my family. Family and all my missionaries, people, all Christian, against all and. I became.
Tell me, what was it like when you were a young woman, when you were growing up?
Oh, grew
in
up.
Burma. Yeah.
I live in the mission school.
Oh.
I am a Roman Catholic, convent school then. I have no teaching Buddhist. And when I go to university, I met this major then. At that university, I have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
There's a lot of friends have no religion.
Uh-huh.
There are some of them community, you know.
Okay.
No religion have community. I became community.
Oh, okay.
I Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
And I meet all my friends. I community, no religion. And
it's the same as me. I was brought up Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
And then I became atheist. So
My mother. Married me, the Catholic, and I became Catholic. All my children are Catholic. And later, I practice all religion, and this is Buddhist. It's very peaceful, and I change to the Buddhist.
Did you believe in God?
Which God? Buddhist God. Which God? There's a law called Buddhist or Catholic?
Catholic.
No.
You
because
as a child, no.
When
I child, yes, I believe or I pray.
Yeah.
I pray. Sometimes I become my.
She believes in Buddhist at the time.
At the young, I believe Catholic.
Yeah.
Ah.
At the name of the Father, the good statement.
Yes.
But when I grew up, I always practice all the religions, and Buddhism is very peaceful, and I saw my insight, my heart insight, and I very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Interesting. It's very interesting to hear that because, you know, mostly when we think about Burma, we always think everybody's Buddhist.
Yeah.
But of course, like everywhere, every country in the world, actually, people are different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people Buddhist, some Christian, some have no religion. So, Venerable, you grew up in a. Did you grow up in a village or in a city or?
I grew up at the Rangoon. But
Rangoon is a city of Burma.
Oh,
okay.
You grew up in Rangoon. Okay.
Yes.
And you went to university?
Yes, university.
What did you study there?
BSc Maths.
Mathematics.
Bachelor Science of Mathematics.
Oh, okay. So you mathematics, okay, very good. And I'm interested, you said that you tried to practice the different religions, and you found Buddhism to be the most peaceful one.
Yeah.
Could you talk more about that? How did you try practicing the different religions? What did you do? And what was it that you found very peaceful about your Buddhist practice?
Mm-hmm. Catholic is only prayer, only prayer, but the Buddhist, we do, we our, try ourselves, not prayer, we can get, depend on ourselves.
Uh-huh.
If we try, we can get, not
uh-huh.
prayer. I believe that.
Uh-huh.
I try by myself.
Uh-huh.
I will struggle for my life.
Mm.
I have 5 sons,
mm.
and another 10 sons I adopt.
Really?
Yeah. Adopted 10 sons.
Five
yes.
wasn't enough.
Lot of 15 children. another 10 adopt, and
I
was. Yeah. Wife, 10 wives and 5 daughters. I very struggle my life.
She had to struggle for her life.
At the day, I go to the office and audit. Do you know audit?
Audit.
For accounts and
accounts.
Yeah, auditing the accounts.
At the night, at the company, I draw the...
By doing this, you got more money. That's
right.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I look at the...
Part-time, and that's...
I look at the patient, special nurse. One night I get 3,000. A lot of works I struggle for my children. I can't sleep. I do not live at school. I go to a company and 1 month I go back home and I give money for my children. My husband is very, how to say, very honest. Very honest, and you can do, you do. I cannot do. And she lived very quietly.
Okay.
Not help me anything.
Okay.
Yes.
So
her husband doesn't support her.
Yeah.
And was the husband looking after the children?
No, she had to struggle for herself.
Not enough.
So you're doing 3 jobs.
Yeah.
Husband wasn't working, and you raised 15 children.
Yeah.
And I wonder why you wanted to become a nun.
This is I hate. Well, Mary.
Where are their children now? How are they? Little, big, where?
The dog is go away, fly away. My 2 sons is with me here. 2 sons are at Bora. Thailand Bora, and waiting come here.
Uh-huh.
One of the elder sons live with her, his father, together.
Okay. So
I always put their money to Thailand Bora and Bama.
Mm-hmm.
Some money I donate all.
Okay.
I have no money. I get money, I donate all.
Okay.
Yes.
Why did you want to adopt 10 children?
Adopt children fly away.
But why
did
you adopt?
Why you adopt that?
Oh, their parents are dying. My sister is dying, and 4 children.
Oh.
Very little. A little one is 1 month.
Oh.
When my sister died, a little one, so baby is 1 month, I got a milk and I look at her.
Oh.
And his husband go away, not look after their children.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at my children and I call the childcare
to look after the child.
Yeah.
Yes, and this family,
helper.
One of girl come in, another her brothers come here because their parents are dying. All of parents, no, yeah, I all. Look after them.
Mm.
They are all graduate.
Mm.
My son, all my sons are graduate. The other dog are graduate and go away.
Ah.
I try my best.
They are educated. They left her.
You sent all of your children to college?
Yeah, all graduate.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah. That's very impressive. So you obviously worked for many years very hard in Yangon to raise your family.
Yeah.
At some point, You ended up in the refugee camp on the Thai border.
Yes.
How did that happen? Why did you become a refugee?
My brother lived in Sydney and called me.
Uh-huh.
If you want to come to Australia,
yeah.
You must be go to the refugee camp.
Okay.
And we go to the refugee camp underground. Oh, underground is secretly. I gave money to...
They have to go separately.
You know DKB? DKB. Buddhist Cram community. Fighting.
Yeah.
Agree with the government and they go freedom by car.
They are against the Burmese government, that's Karen.
That's
why.
They give money and go to refugee camp. A lot of money and go to refugee camp.
Uh-huh.
At the refugee camp, we are very poor.
Mm.
Oh, they give rice, wine, and a little bit salt. We not enough food.
Not enough to eat there with four children.
Four children in
refugee. Yeah. But I struggle and apply to I get job at the hospital and I counseling. I do at the counseling and I get money and we are comfortable.
So you were able to work while you were at the
counseling, all there.
Counseling.
So you're able to work while you're in camp. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
I lived there from refugee camp 4 years and I applied always UN. Mm-hmm. UN, do you know?
Yeah.
UN, come in. I apply, and I'm trying, and I can come to Australia. My brother called me and do not look at me. I'm trying by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I apply, and I again, and they call me and come here.
Okay. What was it like in the refugee camp? What kind of buildings did they have? Were you staying in tents, or did they have bamboo huts?
Bamboo huts. Very dirty and no clear. Is it pretty important for me? But at the water.
And whereabouts on the border?
Mesa.
Nupu camp, nearby.
Nupu camp.
Okay. Yeah.
Burma and Thailand border.
Yeah. Okay. In the north. Yeah.
Mm. There's a lot of intelligence there.
No security. Yes. Sometimes KNU come and fighting. Sometimes the Thailand soldier come and fighting. It's a lot of dangerous.
So the fighting is going on.
No security. No security.
Yeah.
We cannot go outside. It's the area. A little bit area, we can live only stay quietly.
Yes. I know that in that region they've been fighting continually since the Second World War. Yeah, they've been fighting continually. I spent about a month or so staying in a little farm school place for orphaned children on the border near Mahong Song.
Near
the border there. And that was just a little place, and they had some farming and a school, very simple buildings, and just orphaned children, boys and girls. And so I stayed there, and we gave the kids some lessons and helped out with the farming and stuff. And it was called Putakaset, is the name of the place. And it was a very good setup. You know, they were teaching the kids sila, teaching them meditation.
Those who are educated, they teach the children.
Mm. Yeah, so that was good. But I know there's been a lot of all that struggle, because then why are they fighting? Because they're sending drugs over.
They sell the drugs and fighting.
Mm.
That's their job. Looting and all.
Yeah, yeah.
afraid of my family life. What the? I afraid of my become next born. I afraid of next born and I want to escape from my life and I become man. I cannot go back. I will go up, up. I'm very afraid of next born. Yes.
Venerable, well, you said that you spent some time in a monastery in Myanmar. You mentioned at the beginning, you said you stayed for 9 days at a retreat somewhere.
Yeah, no monastery, Yegda.
Oh, Yegda.
Meditation center. There's a lot of meditation center there.
No monks. Only Yegda. Yes, okay. Meditation center.
And who was the teacher there?
Uttumana.
Uttumana.
Sakai Uttumana.
From Sakai.
Live in Uttumana place. Uttumana place and come here.
Okay.
His name is Uttumana.
Uttumana. What meditation did you learn there? What was he teaching in terms of meditation?
Moko. Then. Prasasamubha.
Eyes. Well, when he was cremated, his eyes didn't burn. Yeah, and I think it's still on the shrine.
Moko is breathing in, breathing out.
His eyes are still on the shrine in the temple, I believe.
He was standing at samadhi and watching our mind, concentration. Concentrate.
Okay.
Watch our body
and
concentrate ourselves. And
can you tell us in more detail exactly? Because I know that he used the teacher Samapada as his main teaching, but can you tell us more about exactly how he taught to do meditation, Mogul Sado?
This is constant, disappear. Become and disappear. This is always.
There's a Vishesagar, but they don't want to go to the Vishesagar. That's why they cut it off.
They should cut off the Vishesagar.
Yes.
And you're saying to watch impermanence, yeah? So you're rising and falling, yeah?
Yeah, rising and falling. Many kind of meditation.
I don't know clearly how to express. It's hard to express, but we know in Burmese.
Sure.
Cannot explain. Yes.
So were you already practicing meditation when you were in the refugee camp?
Yeah.
You were already practicing there.
At the refugee camp, I started meditation center. At the refugee camp, I organized a little Buddhist. At the monastery, the monks cannot do meditation. I teach him. She can talk the monk. How do they do that? She passed a lot of higher Dhammasriya. Dhammasriya, yes. But she had never meditated. I have a little bit experience. It's a negotiate all the people. Yes.
So at the local monastery near the monk was a study monk, and so you taught him meditation. And you gathered a little group from the refugee camp to practice there.
He helped you organize.
Every year I spoke there. And 1 year, so two times they do meditation. Yes.
Once a year.
Once two times. Okay. 1 year, two times.
Two times in a
year. In the refugee camp, was it mostly I imagine it would be mostly Christians in the
region. Yeah, mostly Christians. A little Buddhist.
Christian, Kachin. Yeah, Chen.
Chen?
Yeah, Chen. Chen.
Is what? And is that the name?
Chen from the Chen Valley.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Chen Valley?
Yeah.
A lot of Kren people.
Kren as well?
Yeah, yes. Kren. Fighting. Fighting the government.
Right.
It's there.
Okay. So Kren and.
They got the weapons to fight.
Yeah.
Can you live there?
Kren National. I don't know
unity. US. Kren National Unity. Fighting group.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So. I imagine they must have had, if they're mostly Christians, they must have had their own churches or services or something. Did they do, in the Christian group, did they do the Mass or something like that in the...
I think the Mass meeting in Valihevala, that area, Christiania.
They do Mass meeting.
Most of them are Catholics.
Most of them Catholic.
Yeah.
Mission school.
They are from mission school and
And how was it that you finally managed to come to Australia? Did you just all of a sudden one day did you just get the letter to say you're accepted? How did it happen that you came to Australia?
Many
times. When they come the time, I apply again. 2 months and 3 months come again, I apply again.
Again and again.
4 and 5 times I apply.
Finally she got a visa to come.
How did you get the visa? Did they send you a letter or did they see you in person?
They got a letter from UN, that's why they had to come.
Otherwise they
won't come.
Okay.
They can't come.
How did you feel on the day that the letter arrived from the UN?
Oh, very happy.
Very happy.
Okay.
How old were your sons then?
What's that?
How old, your sons, four sons were with you?
What age? Two sons here, two sons at the border. One, the eldest.
In Burma.
His father.
How old are they? How many years old? Your son?
26 and 28. 28 is married. And at the border camp, 30 and 22nd. 22.
Mm. 22, yes. Mm. So, and...
The eldest is at 30 years.
33
years.
Okay.
Yes.
And did you come out from the camp together with your sons, or was that at different times?
Together.
Yeah,
okay. Okay, very good. And then when you came to Sydney, your sons working now in Sydney?
No, still studying.
Okay.
No job.
And how did you decide to become a nun? What made you want to ordain as a nun? When you were in Burma, did you already want to be a nun, or was that only when you got to Sydney that you decided you wanted to become a nun?
Before Burma, I was very interested in nun. At the Tengku. Tengku, at the Mobi.
Yes.
It's too hard to practice that Tengku.
When I started,
it's really hard.
In the office, I take the leave 9 days and I become, I change as nun and go there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does anyone know what they're talking about with that?
No.
Yeah.
Very strong.
Yeah. Sweating. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't touch any of it.
Yeah.
There's a meditation teacher in Burma.
Yeah.
His name is what?
The meditation center is Tengku.
And then
Mobi.
up the road from where I was.
Sorry?
You know?
Just up the road from where I was.
Did you know anything about the practice?
I went there and visited, and they were breathing deep and really like hyperventilating for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm. 1 hour. 1 hour there.
1 hour.
Just
continuous.
Actually, through your nose, they said, not through your mouth. That's what I heard.
Sometimes running loose.
So essentially the method. I was told by a monk who practiced there. He said that the method basically is you sit for an hour and breathe as hard as you possibly can through your nose for 1 hour, and then you just sit there and force yourself to sit as long as you can through the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just sit for as long as you can and just endure through the pain for like 6 hours or something like that. And that's the whole practice.
I think they have a different monk there now. When I was there, it's the new monk.
He's tough.
And he doesn't do that method anymore.
Doesn't he?
So one of the others was trying to explain it to me. Oh, the monk before used to do this, so
right.
I didn't really understand it. I tried it a bit and couldn't quite get it. And they said, oh, don't worry, we don't do that now. We do Mahasi here.
It's become
a Pandita type Mahasi Sangha.
Pandita's one of the students of Mahasi Sangha. That's the largest meditation school in Burma.
So it's no longer the hyperventilating and the
Maybe it's now.
It was always a minority practice.
down through Sayadaw Janaka, who's Ayanyani's preceptor, and another one of Janaka's students is at Mobi now. Just outside of Mingaladon.
Yeah. I know that my uncle was a friend of mine who practiced there. He said that the then teacher, now this would have been, I was talking to him in, nearly 20 years ago, and he'd been several years before that. So the then teacher was the student of the original founder of the technique.
Ah.
But he said that the teacher that he saw there was one of the most impressive monks that he'd ever seen. He was really incredibly bright and energetic. So, yeah, he was very impressed with the monk, but found the practice very difficult. He said, not many people.
Where does it lead to, this practice?
Yeah.
Headaches.
I have done this hyperventilation and it led me to, your experience, your birth, energy of this, and then it took me out in space, it could say, and it was a kind of a connection to oneness, I felt all the answers and all the questions and the answers were there. So that's a funny feeling. But this hasn't got to do with Buddhism. So it's I think it works for everyone. And it's not so hard. Okay. Well, what I experienced, that was not connected to religion, it was therapy.
Yeah, like a rebirthing therapy.
Yeah.
Now, from what I heard, how it's described to me, is basically that it wasn't about the hyperventilating period, but that was just like basically clearing out and gaining energy. But really, the real practice was simply to sit and to just go through pain. That was the basic practice,
By breathing so hard?
No, after breathing. So you breathe, you hyperventilate for an hour, and then you stop, but you keep on sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit for as long as you possibly can after that. So often they would sit for like 6 hours or something like that, and just pushing through the pain. And so he would teach not to use the noting technique, so not to use Mahasi noting technique or anything else, but he was basically that all of these other things, again, I'm just explaining to you the technique as it was explained to me. All of these other things are crutches to stop you from being aware of the actual reality of dukkha.
To throw your body off.
So you're just confronting dukkha in its most raw form without anything to protect you or anything to hide. That was my understanding of his technique.
So that's how it is related to Buddhism.
To
experience dukkha.
And to let go of it. Then, Venerable, tell me, I have heard, because in the West, you know, we've heard of Mahasi and
Mahasi.
Sayadaw and some of these teachers. But I know that there are many, many teachers in Myanmar. Not just one or two.
Yeah.
Of course, many, many places they will practice the Mahasi technique or Pao.
Mahasi, Chamnya Yeda. That's a very famous.
But there must be.
Chamnya is the same.
The same,
But
there must be many others. Apart from the Mahasi technique, Mahasi schools.
Mahasi,
There must be many other meditation centers in Myanmar that we don't hear about. Is that right?
So many meditation centers in Burma.
Different techniques.
Different techniques,
Mogo and Unavale.
Te-ingu.
Te-ingu is worse, I think. I don't want to practice like that. Mogo is the best, best way to practice,
Because I know in Thailand it's similar, like in if you go to the different villages and towns, you find many monasteries, and they all teach different techniques. You know, there are some popular ones, but there are also some very strange ones, and different ones, they're quite very unusual in different places. Like Ajahn Rat and Cheng Ma is a good example.
Aung San Meditation Center is a big one.
So did you find it hard to keep meditating when you were in the refugee camp? Because it must have been very noisy and scary.
Outside the village, near the mountain, hill, near the hill. And they say quiet.
You can practice at midnight. It's very
silent. Sunday, quiet. My son go to church, I go to monastery. Every Sunday, I go to cave, little cave. And I sit all day, the whole day. Sit meditation the whole day.
Very good. And since you've been here in Sydney, you decided to become a nun, and you said you met that one visiting monk who gave you the ordination. How did that come about? How did you come to do that? How did you come to do that ordination?
He said, "I don't know about the other person." At that time,
sponsor, one of the group sponsor,
The monk to come here.
If anyone is can sponsor, Burmese monk can come here. Cannot come.
But it's hard to come.
Yes.
The government doesn't grant.
Burmese government.
Now it's easy, I think. Changing a little bit.
Changing policy is 10 years and maybe easy. But not definite, I don't believe.
Military government is not good.
So you're not confident that the change will last? I think it's still uncertain, isn't it, in Burma? They had...
Not definite.
Not definite.
Not sure.
Because now Aung San Suu Kyi is
campaigning.
And Hillary Clinton went to meet her. You know Hillary Clinton from the US?
No arrangement, further arrangement.
But she went to visit, And also the English Prime Minister went there to visit
her. Yeah, that's very good for us.
So that's starting to be some improvement now, that would be very good. So I still don't know how this monk got sponsored to come to Sydney. And you met him, And how did it come that he ordained you as a nun? Did you ask him?
She had to ask him to become a nurse. From this country, the monks from this country, they didn't allow her to become a nurse.
Why not?
I don't know. They don't want to take care of the nuns,
people,
you know.
Yeah.
Women.
They do not live together.
Yeah.
They are very smart.
Yeah.
So together.
Some monks are, you know, very stingy.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
They have to. I can see.
Find one dog, nun.
Uh-huh.
No, they do not like nun. Only one they want
can
to
see
mom
is the wash, you know.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the Blue Mountain. I go to the forest.
Mm.
I do not go in the city. All the monks is do not can call me. There's not none monastery is not there, eh? Yes. Just now, government gave me one bedroom, I live alone.
Okay.
I do my meditation, I listen, okay. I read books, a lot of
yeah.
religions I can practice
okay.
at my house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Burmese monk said, it's not possible to become a nun here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very sad, isn't it?
I don't know. All the monks said like that.
Sorry?
I said things are increasing. Possibilities are increasing.
Yeah. Well, it only happens if people say that it's impossible, then you just have to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then it becomes possible.
Yeah.
It's always impossible until somebody does it.
Yes.
And
so
you
the
said,
monk who gave you ordination, he went back to Burma, or is he here still?
Yeah.
The monk who ordained you, is he in Australia,
no.
or he went back to Burma already?
No, he went back to Sakai in Burma.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
my teacher is at Sakai. Only visit, not stay. Burma.
They can stay as a reader grant.
Also emailed many of the Thai ministries, including here. And I sent out 33 emails from Burma saying, I'm an Australian citizen, I'm asylum, I want to come back to Australia. Okay. I did not get a reply from Santee Forest Monastery.
Yeah.
No. Where did you send it to? Which address? I don't remember now, but I didn't get a response. And Santee office. Yeah, Santee office is not my domain. I also sent it to the various Burmese places, and I got a response from some of them saying, we do not have accommodation for women. And the one I got back was actually from San Mitavana, and they said, it's actually Ayadamananda. She said, please come. Come soon. Come now. Have fun. And great, Chris on down there. And I had a little bit of a stir when I was there. I ran up a few of the Burmese monasteries. I'm a silo. I'm an Australian citizen. You don't have to get special permit anything. Oh, well, we don't have accommodation for females. Why? But why? Why not? Aren't most of your supporters female? Yes? Why don't you have accommodation for female? Oh, we just don't. Okay. And then I did find one Burmese monastery in Victoria.
No,
Victoria. Oh, yes, please come. But I've already had my ticket for Adelaide then. So is this a Burmese monastery? And the Sahibul said, oh yes, we have a forest monastery up here, you're very welcome.
In
Victoria. Victoria. No, not Bendigo, somewhere else, and I lost it. Put it to one side. But I've got the contact details somewhere in my bag, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. So dig that out.
Mm-hmm. No, there's a Karen community at Bendigo.
There is a Karen community at Bendigo, and they asked me to come and visit and give them a Dharma talk, but I'm not there, so I couldn't do it. So perhaps another time. And they were very welcoming, and apparently they also allowed silos at the Karen Burmese temple in Bendigo, and this other one which is in north of Melbourne, about an hour and a half drive north of Melbourne, also said come on up, but I only learned about them through word of mouth while I was in Melbourne.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I thought that was actually very positive, but I'm moving forward.
It's interesting from a legal perspective. Actually, and this is a bit beside the point, but according to the immigration laws, basically, when you get the visas to allow monks to come from overseas, they treat it like an employment thing. So the essential thing is that you have to show that you have to demonstrate that you're not occupying places that could be taken by Australians. Like if we had a monk come from Thailand to come and stay here, I would have to part of that visa application process would be to demonstrate, especially if it's a long term visa. If it's a tourist visa, then never mind. But if it's a long term visa, then I have to demonstrate that we're not displacing Australian monks from staying here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if I was inviting that Thai monk and then Australian monk rang up and said, "Can we come and stay here?" and I said, "No, you can't. The place is full. We have the Thai monks here." And it's actually illegal.
And you can make a distinction that, like, it's a 30-year Thai monk who could teach you versus a 2-year Australian monk who couldn't. I mean, you can't make that kind of distinction.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, generally speaking, with employment, yeah, it'd be this. Similar qualifications, yeah.
Okay, of similar qualifications.
Yeah, but all of those things being equal, it's interesting whether the Saleh case would also be a similar situation, since Australian citizens being refused a place. But of course, usually the government will try to stay out of religious quarrels if they can.
Probably sensible.
Yeah.
And then one thing is, can she stay here legally?
Legally, yes, you can stay here. Yeah. Because there's with refugee status and there's no problem here. Yeah.
No recommendation needed.
No, nothing. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Only if somebody is on PR, permanent resident, temporary resident visa. They sometimes have some restrictions in staying in different places.
Yeah.
But if you have refugee visa, then it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
How long did you wait to get the accommodation? You said you're in a government house now.
Yeah.
A government house now. How long did you have to wait?
She got the government housing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long list normally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd be really lucky to have.
She's lucky to have. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
How long was the wait?
Around here, nearly 4 years.
Nearly 4 years to get into that. Yeah. That's a long.
Maybe 3 years.
3 years.
Very long.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years. Another one. Mm-hmm. The wooding is. Mm-hmm. This is
husband is friend community. Even 13 years and
keep nothing. Friend community, only Christian. I'm only one Buddhist.
Oh,
this housing.
Oh.
Ten houses. There's a friend community, Christian. Okay. I'm only Buddhist. No.
All are Christians.
Only one.
She's a one. But Buddhist.
Yeah.
Quite concerned that the representatives on the UN Commission for the Karen people were all Christian, and so therefore they were preferentially getting visas for Christians, and they were not getting visas for Buddhist Burmese people and Buddhist Karen people, and because the UN representatives themselves were Christian.
That's because they could repent or something.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, there's quite a serious concern about that. Yeah.
In her environment, they persuaded to become a Christian.
They pressured you.
Yeah.
All the Christian.
The Chinese woman is a wash.
Chinese woman is worse.
Yes.
Chinese Christian.
Yes, she's a Christian. Actually, she's a Buddhist.
She can't Buddhist.
And when she came here,
Only 10 years. Of course, Christian.
Their families all are here, and then she baptized herself.
Okay. Yeah.
And then she said, "Oh, their religion is very good." They said. She said.
Always.
And then she asked me to change me to.
Always organize me changes your religion to Buddhist. I will give you a lot of
diamond,
money.
diamond earring and all. She said, yeah. If you change you are.
Always organize me.
Yes, that's
the
only problem.
Shwedagon Pagoda. I was visiting the Shwedagon Pagoda just before I left, and I'm, you know, having a nice little meditation. And those Christians came up and started trying to convert me back to Christianity, because obviously, you know, I ought to have been Christian with a face like this. Yeah. And, you know, they didn't offer me any dong. I kind of, like, why are you a Buddhist? I said, do you really want me to answer that? And they said, yes, we do. So I did. And they kind of wandered off.
I told her, I cannot change my life, you are diamond. I cannot change my life, you are diamond.
So where did you live after you became a nun, before you got
I
the house?
I lived with my son.
Oh, you lived
with
your
two
son.
Sons, yes. I'm very afraid of my life. I'm afraid. I do not want to go to the community. I live in the forest, very quiet. I do not meet any community, any people. Since now I want to study school and I go to the community. If I finish, I go to the forest. In the forest, I want to go to the forest. But it's like quiet. Thank you very much, Pandey. You helped me. Yes.
No, of course, yeah. That's what our monastery is for. We're very glad to have that opportunity. You know, when I first came here,
yes.
You know, I saw what a beautiful place this was, and I knew that this was a place that could be a great benefit for people to come and practice.
Yeah.
So very rare to find a place that is so quiet, so much beautiful nature, but still accessible. People can still come here.
Yeah.
Only problem is a little bit cold. Apart from that, it's the perfect monastery.
How do you make it so warm in here?
In here?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a heating on. I don't think it is. But
it's enough people to
it's the body heat, yeah.
It's also upstairs, it tends to get a bit warmer in the afternoon up here.
Okay. Yeah.
But there is, the floor heating should be on in the morning, so if you want to come up and meditate in the mornings, and if anybody wants the heat with floor heating on at any other time, because now it's getting cold, if people want to come and meditate late at night or something like that, then just who's in charge? Are you in charge of
probably it?
Probably,
I think I did see that Wednesday evenings too.
Oh, maybe that's
the afternoon,
so
might have
been. Yeah. So we can turn it on if it has heating under the floor, so as the winter comes closer, then it becomes a nice place to come.
Making the meditation more very inviting. You can freeze in your cookie or come meditating.
Well, thank you very much, Venerable, for sharing that with us. That's very fascinating for me to hear that. And I know everybody's stories in their life has some amazing things, but some of those things are extra amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've done so much work and so much striving for helping others in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that with your Dhamma practice that we can offer you a chance to find some peace. and some maybe some safety, some security, a sense of a place to belong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you certainly deserve it. Okay, let's maybe finish up that. Thanks.